What's up, everybody? It's IBS Yeezus coming at you guys with the Hit Stick Episode 3, doing NFL talk. My co-host is currently preoccupied right now, which isn't a problem at all, in case he's listening. But I'm going to run this show by myself, kind of like I did the one time I did the baseball show. So unless we get callers, shouldn't last longer than an hour. Just going to cover some of the topics from this week. And then touch on some things that I saw during a couple of the preseason games. So before we get into that, just want to give you guys a disclaimer. The platform and the Hit Stick are both part of the Iconoclastically Bombastic Network. You can find us online at iconoclasticallybombastic.com. You can also find us on Twitter at sports_IB. You can catch us on Facebook, Iconoclastically Bombastic Sports. We also have Iconoclastically Bombastic Television. They talk about movies there. And we also have a IB music group that covers the music genres as well. So we've pretty much got something for everybody. But I pretty much just deal with sports. So here we go. In the NFL today, or this past week, we had a lot of topics come up, a lot of things worth discussing. One of the things that I think was probably the most talked about topic that was not actually related to the game was Chris Borland and Chris Carter again. I think reports came out earlier in the week that Chris Borland, I guess is an excerpt from his Outside the Line interview that he did. It keeps coming up. The Chris Borland thing keeps coming up. I'm a 49er fan, so it kind of hits home. I know a lot of people tend to use that or use Chris Borland as an example when they want to, you know, make fun of the 49ers and stuff. But I'm just speaking from a football fan perspective. I'm tired of Chris Borland. I supported Chris Borland as a player. I thought he was great. I had high hopes for him, thought he was very intelligent, that it would translate on the field, especially at the NFL level. It did. He retired, citing basically fears of concussions and stuff like that. I have no problem with that. You know, it's just a part of life. Some things are not made for everybody. Not everybody's cut out for something. He got into the game, realized it wasn't for him long term, and so he got out. I have a lot of respect for him for that decision, but at this point, I'm just tired. Like, dude, just shut the hell up. Shut up. Like, he's got this Outside the Line interview. Of course, ESPN loves to constantly play things on loop to kind of beat it in your head. They're villainizing the league, but I don't understand who told them that the league wasn't this way, that the league was pure. I don't understand how Chris Borland could get into the NFL and assume that it was some squeaky clean image run organization. You know, the real issue for this week from the Chris Borland thing was more on Chris Carter talking about Fall Guys. Chris Borland didn't name Chris Carter when he first put out his statement saying that it bothered him that during the rookie, I think they call it synopsis or rookie interviews, they pretty much had two former players who obviously the media dug up later that it was Chris Carter and Warren Sapp. Talk to the rookies about how to handle getting in trouble, what to expect as they move on into their professional careers and stuff. And one of the things that stuck with him that kind of, you know, he even said it stuck with him, like bothered him, was when Chris Carter encouraged the guys to find a fall guy in case they get in trouble. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying not to bash Chris Borland. I'm trying not to offend people when I do this, but I guess there's really no way around it. To be honest, the world's just not squeaky clean. It's not spotless. The NFL is not some organization or entity that runs as if it's Chick-fil-A. You know, you go to Chick-fil-A, everybody's like, "Oh, my pleasure," and they love you to death, and they remember your name, and sometimes they even walk you out to your car. They bring an umbrella when it rains and stuff. Like, you just feel like Chick-fil-A really cares about the customer. NFL don't give a damn about you. They don't give a damn about the players. I feel like you should know that by now. As a player who's going into the league, you should know that. And if you don't know anything about the NFL or what your career is going to be, you should know that the league does not care about you. Because when you get hurt or when one person or two people, even a team, if anything happens to you guys, there are plenty of people waiting in the wing to fill your position. They might not be as good as you, but it's a warm body, and they'll give it their best, and they'll still be entertaining. There is nothing, nothing that can stop the NFL. So all this concussion hoopla and people trying to do these campaigns, oh, it's not safe, we know that already. You should know that as a player. You shouldn't have to have people shooting themselves in the head and doing all these crazy things post-career to scare you and to be like, maybe this isn't for me. What if I take one too many blows to the head? You see it every week. You experience it every day. You know, like, I'm not buying that he's all of a sudden like, I didn't know it was like this. Like, I'm just not buying that, man. Like, he had to know. He had to know. And I will give him some level of respect. I don't want to bash him too hard because he didn't name Chris Carter by name. But obviously somebody looked it up. I mean, it's actually a funny 5-minute clip. I watched the entire thing. But somebody looked it up, and it got out as Chris Carter. Now, before we even get into what he said, how can anybody at the NFL level, in the executive office, whoever is making the decision to have these rookies talk to, et cetera, how can anybody think that Chris Carter and Warren Sapp would be a good idea? Like, seriously, man. Ray Lewis is preaching every day. He actually got away with murder. Put him out there to talk to the kids, man. Let him tell his story, and then let him explain to them how you can mess up and come out squeaky clean. Because people don't even talk about Ray Lewis killing somebody. They will talk about Michael Vick killing dogs before they talk about Ray Lewis having a body on his hand. So I don't know what he did to get people to somewhat forget, but hey, that's the guy I feel like should be talking, not Chris Carter and Warren Sapp. Chris Carter says something stupid every other week, man. He's in the news for saying something silly every other week. Warren Sapp, we don't even need to talk about how silly Warren Sapp is. That's just already a bad idea from the jump. So the video already starts off bad. That's the first thing I know. Chris Carter, Warren Sapp, nothing good can come out of this. Even if Chris Borman never said that somebody told him that you should get a fall guy, instantly looking at that video on the freeze frame, I know this is going to be a disaster. So in the video, Chris Carter pretty much explains the whole concept of a fall guy. He jokes about it. He laughs about it a little bit. Warren Sapp kind of chuckles and laughs about it. And then he had Teddy Bridgewater come up on the stage, and he explained to them, I think the way he used his explanation or the way he explained it to him was, this is Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater is a business. You are now Teddy Bridgewater Incorporated. Your body is how you make your money. You should tell your crew, and it should be known amongst your crew, if they want to be a part of this, if they want to continue to live off of you pretty much, they need to make sure nothing happens to you. You are to be protected. And the sense that he was talking as far as protection was from the legal standpoint. If Teddy goes out and Teddy gets drunk and Teddy gets behind the wheel and his friend's in the passenger side and they get pulled over, his friend needs to slide on over to the driver's seat and Teddy needs to slide on over to the other side and the friend needs to act like he was the one driving. Basically, something to that nature. I think that's probably the minimum. But I don't understand why this is traumatizing to Chris Borman. I thought that was something that all elite athletes or people who eventually get paid knew. Your crew takes the blame for you. That's just the culture of professional sports, man. Like Chris Borland being blown by that or disturbed by that just instantly should have told him he didn't belong in the NFL. If that's what bothers you, this isn't for you. Because that crap happens all the time. 85 to 90% of those people in that room laughed. And it wasn't like a nervous laugh. It was that's right. You know, kinda like if I say or if a Redskins fan is like, we going to the Super Bowl, somebody, man, shut your ass up. Ha 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 type laugh. That's the kind of laugh they had. It was one of those things where you're not necessarily ashamed because, honestly, it's true. And then Chris, later on, like I said, I thought it was pretty ironic. They had one of the guys ask them a question later on in the video. If there was anything that him or Sapp could change, what would it be in their careers? And they both shared their stories. And Sapp's story still was stupid. Warren Sapp's always been dumb as far as decision-making goes. So I don't think even if he changed, because he told the story about his rookie season or going to the combine, he failed a drug test on the way to the combine. Even if he changed it, he still would have made dumb decisions. Chris Carter's story was a little bit more touching, but I can understand where Chris Carter's coming from. I can understand, based off of his story alone, I can see why he told the Fall Guy story. And this is where I start to get a little pissed off about Chris Borland. Chris Borland, I don't know if it's intentional or if this is just part of the media doing it, but either way, the things that Borland is saying, the way he's going about it, it's annoying to me. People make a living off the NFL. Chris Borland left the NFL because he had a choice, because he felt his body was more important than making money. A lot of these guys at this level, this is what they do, is all they can do, is how they make a living, is how their kids make a living, their moms, dads, uncles, nieces, nephews, et cetera. And that's kind of what Chris touched on. You know, every decision that you make as a professional athlete affects everybody around you because so many people depend on you. Chris Borland is, like I said, I don't know if it's intentional, but he's shaking the foundation. And that kind of annoys me, man. Like, just go away. It's not for you. I understand. That's cool. This isn't what you want to be a part of. Just don't be a part of it. Just let it go. You know, from here on out, if somebody wants to talk to you about it, just say no comment if that's really how you feel. Otherwise, you just keep coming off like a punk. You keep coming off like a whistleblower, and it's not even that it's not a good look for the league. I just don't think it's a good look for athletes, man. Like, if this is how guys want to make their living, it's not necessarily right, but it's not your place to judge people, and it's not your place to shake the foundation. Let the establishment do that. Let law handle that, you know. If guys got Fall Guys, let them have the Fall Guys. Like they said, they'll bail them out. That's those people's choice. This is their choice. This is how they want to live their life. Can't everybody just walk away from the game? Can't everybody just have something else outside of football? Don't take that away from them. Let it go, man. Let it go. So, like I said, it's just one of those things that was in the news. Also, even more funny is that you get guys like Plaxico Burress and even Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice is in on it again. I know when Jerry Rice admitted to taking Stickum, or taking Stickum, like it's a PED, admitted to putting Stickum on his gloves or something like that. I know Chris Carter was one of the first people in the news like, I never used Stickum. And then I saw a quote from Jerry Rice, it was more or less like, I never used the Fall Guy. Like, come on, guys, stop being petty. You guys are old now. Just be old. Go away. But if you do get a chance to look up the video, I think the one I saw was only like 5 minutes. I thought it was pretty funny. There's a lot of ironic things said in the video, even at the end where Chris Carter and Warren Sapp are pretty much like, God willing, you know, we're going to be here next year, and we're still going to be here giving this same speech, and you guys are going to be off on your careers and this and that. And I'm like, man, nah, you're not going to be there next year. I'm sure they're going to get probably get Tim Tebow and Russell Wilson to give this speech to rookies from now on rather than just anybody else. But another thing I wanted to touch on about the whole video, I don't understand how Chris Carter could think that him in his Hall of Fame jacket telling rookies on camera to get a fall guy how to break the law pretty much and be dishonest individuals would ever go over well with anybody. Like, you know, it's not no secret, like, somebody had a camera phone and he was being recorded. Like, he's probably on NFL films or something like that, you know, giving this speech. And I'm just like, dude, seriously, just from start to finish, it was completely mismanaged. But like I said, if the best thing that can come from this situation, Chris Borland just fades to black and goes away. Let the media stir it up every now and then, but just shut up, dude. Stop talking. You don't want to play in the league. We get it. You're a pioneer, I guess. Some people looking up to you like, oh, it takes so much courage. Yeah. And no, nobody's forcing you. Courage would be if somebody had a gun to your head and you still decided not to play football. Nobody's forcing you to go play the game. It's a privilege, something that you earned through your hard work. If you don't want to do it, then don't do it. Just don't fuck it up for everybody else. Idiot. Anyway, switching to the next subject that was a hot topic this week, my man Killer Cam from Seattle. Cam Chancellor is holding out. It started out as a joke to some of us, me especially, since I am a 49er fan, but Cam Chancellor's holding out. right, just like Russell Wilson is going to hold out. Yeah, okay, cool. But he looks to be serious. I haven't kept a timeline. I wasn't as in tune to Cam Chancellor as I was to the Dez Bryant contract fiasco. But he looks to be very serious about holding out and not playing. I didn't really get too far in depth looking to his reason for holding out. I'm under the assumption, obviously, if you're holding out, you want more money. I don't think he can get anything else out of Seattle in regards to his status on the team. He is the voice in the huddle, the unquestioned leader of that defense. So I don't think he would have any problem with anybody questioning, you know, his status on the team. So we're just gonna say it's safe to assume this is a financial move, that he wants more money. But what I don't understand is Cam Chancellor is already the second highest paid player at his position. So it just seems really weird, this move. But hold on, we got a caller here. I'm going to see if I can get them on the line. Let's see here. 9723, you're on the hit stick. Who am I talking to?
It's the commish. You're fearful.
Oh, great.
You're fearless, overlord.
Oh man, I got my mute button ready.
I just tuned in. I thought it was on the. I was looking at Facebook and I saw it and I started listening. Some good topics you were getting into.
Yeah, I'm actually just touching base on the Cam Chancellor contract and what's going on with him in Seattle, and I was just letting people know, it's strange to me. Like, he just signed his contract, or he just got a new contract in 2013. He's made $12.65 million in the last 2 years. He's set to make $4.5 million this season. And, again, he's the second highest-paid player at his position, and he's got 3 years left on this contract. So I don't understand where he has any leverage to demand or to hold out, basically.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. I mean, a lot of times I think these guys get bad advice for their agent, and the agents, maybe they see all these quarterbacks get money, and they think they can start a trend and set the bar. But Seattle can't give in to him because if they do, they're setting a new precedent, and it can't be having guys, you start tearing contracts up, and you got 3 years left on them.
Yeah. There was actually an interesting article on Bleacher Report about that. I skimmed over it last night, where it's interesting because you don't think about it as a fan. We think, you know, as a fan, you think, oh, it's between Seattle and Cam. But in actuality, the whole league is watching this because I didn't think about it when I first initially heard that Cam was holding out. But Seattle has a history of bending for people, mainly Marshawn Lynch, whenever they, like, you know, a player wants to hold out. And it's putting a lot of pressure on not only the NFL executives and owners, but also on the sports agents. A lot of agents are rooting for Seattle to stand their ground because it's hard for them to work with other organizations because not everybody is Seattle. You try this crap, I'll give an example, the 49ers. Vernon Davis tried it. You see what happened to him. Not only did he have career low numbers, but he ended up having his butt right back on the field because he couldn't afford it. So it's just – it's one of those things where I know I hate to quote the guy, but Wallace said the league is a copycat league, and in some senses it is. But this is one of those things that you don't want copycatting.
No, I think it's a bad trend. I think everybody – he sees everybody else, particularly on his team, get paid. Wagner got paid. Bennett has – I don't remember Bennett, but Lynch got paid. Russell got paid. Sherman got paid. Earl got paid. So I guess he's filling up that. But he got paid is the part he's missing out on. But let me – if I can get back to your boiling – I like some of the boiling stuff you were talking about. It just amazes me how self-righteous everyone is – well, not everyone, but the people on Twitter and the people that work for ESPN, not so much the NFL Network because that's where you got kind of some of the shady people, but especially like ESPN, Chris Carter, and Dick Ditka, and how self-righteous they are about things, about players' conduct. I think, and not to bring race into it, but I am, I think it's because it's a mostly white audience, and if you ever notice, when white guys start talking about when black players get in trouble, maybe in general, there's always this air of, you shouldn't be so stupid, how can you do that? There's always this judgmental, there's very little nuance. I call it white guy sports radio. There's very little nuance in the average white fan's interpretation of how black players interact when they get in trouble. And I think people like the ESPN, they just play the hits, and everybody shocked is outraged. And so the fans that are watching the show are like, get him, he's a dummy.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think, I mean, that's kind of what I was trying to touch on with Chris Borland without insulting people from his social realm.
Social background,
demographic. I'm not from the hood. I don't have any real hood roots, but I understand not everybody has a home with mom and dad and a structured family, had to go to church every Sunday, et cetera, et cetera. Some people need a fall guy. Like, those people exist. That's a part of life. I don't understand how you can be judgmental about that. I mean, I look at it like, shoot, at least they're trying to be proactive, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing with Borland is, it's like what you were saying. He is one thing if you don't want to play, but why snitch out on people? Or just talk about the concussions. Why do things that affect other people like that, like it affected Chris Carter, who, no matter what you say, is trying to help. It affects the players that were there. And I guess he's trying to say it's immoral. Well, in general, he is finding some moral problems with it. But, you know, there's a moral problem with every job. You know, you don't have to do it. It's your choice. If it crosses the moral line for you, what they do in the pile, then, you know, don't play. But I don't know why you're going on sports stations trashing a sport, you know?
Yeah, like, that's one part I still do not understand with Chris Borland is that it's almost like he's got a campaign to raise awareness on the negative aspect of the game. But he's like, dude, you should have knew this before you signed up. Like, this is not what you signed up for. So the NFL is not Wisconsin's program. Not everybody that you play with is a Russell Wilson.
Exactly. And it'd be like if you signed up for the military expecting people not to curse or something, or you expected it to look like it does when they're in the public and they're standing at attention and they're marching on the field before the Super Bowl, you expect the military to look like that. And I've never been in the military, but I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm assuming it's not like that all the time. I mean, it's mm-hmm. one of those things where violent men and some women are in close quarters together, and the people that are even drawn to that to some degree are going to have issues.
Yep, I totally agree. And it's just, like I said, the best thing that could possibly happen right now is for him to just go away. Just go away. Stop while you're ahead. Get your little bit of fame out there. You know, do what you want to do. You said you wanted to pursue other things. That's great. Leave it alone, because nothing good is going to come out of it. And I
think
he really
craves the attention a little bit, because for the ESPN article that I read, or maybe I listened to the interview or began to read the article or something, but the interview and the article kind of go together. And he let the camera, once he retired, he let the reporter basically follow him around for 3 months. So as soon as this happened, he was looking for some type of attention. Maybe he thinks it's awareness, but I really think psychologically he's looking for acceptance. He wants the public to accept his decision, and to do that, he's got to tear the game down a little bit.
I think
that are abuses. I'll let you go after this, but I think speak out against things that I think are abuses. I think the way women are treated, particularly on college campuses, by the athletes there, is terrible. There's some of the ways that the football players treat the women in general. Things I've been outspoken about, and the way teams treat their players. All those things are problems with it, but you want to make it better. He's just tearing down.
Yeah. It's okay to give your opinion, but if you're going to be critical, give him a freaking solution or shut up.
Yeah. And he'll say, well, I don't think it's possible to make it safer or something, you know, or, I mean, every job can't be safe. You're going to be a firefighter, that's not safe. You're going to be an ice road trucker, that's not a safe job. You're going to be freaking, I don't know, one of those dudes that gets on top of the mountains and they put the wires in between and the buildings. If you're going to be that dude, you know, every job's not safe. People are allowed to take risks in life, you know?
Yeah, definitely. At least you're getting compensated for it. The people around
exactly. Well, very compensated. But I was just driving home. I'm going to let you go. I just want to call in and hit y'all up.
All right, thanks, man. Appreciate you calling. That was the commissioner of IBS, my man Ronnie, which ironically he called in right before I started talking about Dez Bryant and the Cowboys. So it's probably a good thing he's not around for this particular segment. But I'm not going to bash the Cowboys and Dez Bryant. That joke has played out. I had my fun with the Dez Bryant holdout. But I thought it was really interesting. Somebody posted something in our group about Dez Bryant. It was like an article from the Rolling Stones. I guess he was on the cover, which I thought was interesting that Dez Bryant was on the cover of Rolling Stones. And B, I immediately was like, I'm not reading that crap. F Dez Bryant, F the Cowboys. But a couple comments that I saw on the thread kind of made me curious. So I looked it up, and wow. Dez Bryant is a 30 for 30 in the making. He might be a short series, or maybe he can make a movie off his life, but this story is crazy. So just some things from his story, just the background of Dez's life pre-football. His grandmother was a crack addict. His mom just sold crack. She wasn't an actual crack addict. His father was illiterate, and at the age of 40, impregnated his 14-year-old mother, and his father is also his great uncle. So, yeah, now that I think back on a lot of the things I said about Dez and how he's crazy and stuff, you know what? He might get a little bit of a pass from me, just a little bit. He's had a rough life. So, the real interest to me in this story is what Dez details about the Dez Bryant contract. I know we talk about it a lot in the group. It's been talked about a lot amongst the sports community, the Dez Bryant contract. It's the contract basically that allowed the Cowboys to pretty much monitor Dez Bryant's activities and keep him out of trouble. I never thought to look into that. I just assumed Dez Bryant had a security guard that Jerry Jones hired, and that guy followed him around whenever he wanted to leave or just basically made sure he stayed out of trouble. But what you really found out is Dez Bryant has been getting hustled for quite some time. Prior to the NFL, he met a guy by the name of David Wells, who's also the cousin of Michael Crabtree. David Wells is employed by the Cowboys in what he calls himself as a crisis management expert. The Cowboys pretty much collaborated with Wells. They insisted on that Dez Bryant sign a contract that paid Wells $17,000 a month for 24-hour security, midnight curfew, camera surveillance, and then also barred anybody from visiting Dez without Wells' consent. That, I think, is essentially the Dez Bryant contract. That's extreme. That is extreme. Some of the writers describe it as draconian. Very much so. Very much so. I know we have a lot of people that are like, oh, that's racist. That's racist. And, you know, you hear occasionally a stupid player refer to the contracts of the NFL as slave contracts. That might be the closest thing to a slave contract that we could possibly find. I mean, essentially the Cowboys own Dez Bryant. I mean, from a business standpoint, you could be like, well, yeah, they're protecting their investment, but there's just no way. Like, the guy can't live. He's basically a grown man getting treated like a 10-year-old. He had a midnight curfew. What person over the age of 19 who's out of the house has a midnight curfew? So, as the story goes, upon signing with Roc Nation in November, Bryant had his agents hire an accountant to review his finance. What he found out is pretty much what you would probably expect. Wells got him for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Some of the things that they were talking about, there were $700,000 to $900,000 that was spread out between Wells and unidentified accounts. It included $377,000 paid to Wells and or companies owned by Wells. And there was an $85,000 car insurance for six cars, one of which was in Wells' name. And then checks made out to Bryant that they can't locate. Just a huge mess, huge mess. And there's portions of the article, I think, or somebody interviewed Wells basically asking him how could he do this, and he kind of spazzed out and was like, I've done all this stuff for Dez Bryant. I make this amount of money. I don't need Dez Bryant's money. And it just kind of comes full circle with the way Chris Carter talked during the rookie synopsis, the way Dez Bryant, his experience as a professional athlete, what he's had to go through to get to where he is now, how much money was taken from him, how he felt forced to sign this contract just because he didn't want to get cut, how he pretty much needed this life. He needed this lifestyle because this is all he had. Football is all he had. You hear his backstory. He doesn't have much as far as a family upbringing or background. I think he got dismissed from Oklahoma State, I want to say. So it's not like he necessarily had an education to fall back on. He didn't have a fallback plan like Chris Borland had, and it just shows that this business that is the NFL isn't what it's cracked up to be. We only see the fans. We only see the glory. We only see the touchdowns. We only see the shoes, the cars, the money, the girls. That's all we see. What we don't see is the reality that for everything you gain in the sport, for everything you gain in the league, there is a sacrifice to some degree. There is a sacrifice. You have to pay a price. Nobody comes through this league, nobody comes through this game without giving something in order to obtain something. So I think that's one one of the interesting things, especially coming from Dad's point of view, and it just you know, the article and then what Chris Borland's constantly doing just kind of made me mad. Still makes me a little bit mad at Chris Borland. Like, dude, shut up. Some people need this. Some people need the NFL. Some people need football. This is all that they have. Allow them to make a living. And if some of them, this is actually probably some of the most honest stuff that they've done in playing the game. Now, I don't condone people necessarily using the fall guy. Like, I don't know. You know, maybe I do condone it. I guess that's what I've been saying. I don't have a problem with it. All right? I don't have a problem with it. What I mean is I wouldn't tell a rookie or somebody to do that, but if they didn't, I wouldn't judge them. How about that? That's probably a better way of putting it. I wouldn't have done it like Chris Carter did. I know somebody wrote an article saying that the first rule of a fall guy is that you don't talk about the fall guy. That makes complete sense to me. I wouldn't tell anybody like that. I mean, I would assume I would personally have better sense than getting in trouble when I'm worth that much more money, like that much money. But can't everybody be Peyton Manning and Russell Wilson? You got a lot of Alden Smiths in the league, and those people need to maintain, because the people around them need them to maintain, because everybody's dependent on them. And it sucks for Dez, and I'm glad he got a new contract. He got with a better group in Rock Nation, and he got rid of this guy. But this story with Dez is probably more common than we want to believe. And people are more worried about the concussions and Michael Vick and dogs than they are about some of the real things that are not necessarily the shining light of the NFL and what the Shield stands for. So it's a good article. It's in the Rolling Stones. He's on the cover. He had a couple pictures in there that were quite questionable. But, like I said, I'm not going to take away from the substance that is the article. It's very good. Good read. I would recommend that. That would actually be my recommendation for the week. If you want to read something, read that. Rolling into our preseason talk. RG3 and Kirk Cousins. I know I talk about this dude, RG3, for the last 2 weeks. I don't know how he keeps ending up on my topic list. But for some reason, he's still relevant in the league, and people still care about him. They still think he can be successful. They still blame everybody but RG3. And I'm to the point where I just don't give a damn no more. Who cares? He's not good. I had this argument with my friend yesterday, actually. RG3 is a waste of an NFL player. If you don't believe that, I don't care, because that's what I believe and that's what I know to be true. He has not shown anything since his rookie season that he can be serviceable in the NFL. And people will be like, well, he stays hurt. That's an issue. That would be one of the main reasons why I don't think he'll ever be good. He stays hurt. Even if you block for the guy, you're worried, like he's got a hit count. After 5 hits, RG3 just falls down, failing to comply. Sweet, sweet, sweet. Need some oil or something to put in his joint, something. Senzu bean. Give the guy a Senzu bean after 5 hits so he can come back. RG3 is done, man. He's done. Let it go. Let it go, DC. Let it go, fans. Now, I will say a lot of fans are actually hitting that way. In D.C., I think they're getting tired of it. They're getting tired of the drama that is RG3. But it's still not enough for me, because I still see people being like, well, you know, the offensive line isn't that good and this and that. And then I had somebody ask, well, why did they block for Kirk Cousins and Colt McCoy, but they didn't block for RG3? I watched that game 3 times. I watched every single offensive play 3 times. I can tell you, that offensive line sucked the entire time. They didn't block better for Cousins or Colt McCoy. The rush wasn't as hard because there was, like, second stringers in there, but they were still making the same stupid mistakes. You know what the difference was? Cousins and McCoy got rid of the freaking ball. They just got the ball out their hand. You don't want to get hit, get the ball out your hand. RG3 doesn't check down. He doesn't recognize blitzes. He doesn't, I don't even think he calls audibles. I don't know what he does. I don't know what he does, but if there's any NFL quarterback I really don't respect, I don't respect RG3. I feel like, hell, you can pay me to get sacked. Let it go, people. He's done. He's done. Is Kirk Cousins better? I doubt it. I don't know. I mean, if you look at his starting numbers, they're not that much impressive either, but the guy deserves a shot. I mean, he's been sitting in RG3's shadow for, what, 3 years now? I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Let Kirk Cousins play. I think some people are confirming he's the week one starter. I'm cool with that. Let it be his team. The only reason why I have an issue with him being named the week one starter is because less than 2 weeks ago, Jay Gruden said that it was RG3's team. RG3 would be playing out this year as the leader. He deserves that and this and that. He gave some little spill. Let me just go ahead and say this, too. I'm not a fan of Jay Gruden. I think Jay Gruden is an awful head coach. I think he lacks leadership. He lacks maturity. He lacks direction. He lacks a lot of things that fundamentally you look for in a head coach. Now, granted, he came into a situation that wasn't that desirable, but Tom Sewell is in a situation, his players get arrested every week. He still maintains some type of order, you know, some type of class. He handles things a certain way, and I'm not trying to praise him because I'm a homer. I'm just saying that's how it's done. You can look at the Jets coach. The Jets coach came into a situation that wasn't that great. He had his starting quarterback punched in the jaw. Handled the situation. There's some type of order, some type of structure. Jay Gruden came into a bad situation and made it worse. He made it worse. It's not getting better. The Redskins will be lucky if they win 4 to 5 games this year. And half of that, probably 65% of that, has nothing to do with the players on the field. It has everything to do with everything else outside of football. And I'll leave the rest to my man, I think it's Brian Mitchell. He has a great outlook on the Washington Redskins and what's really going on in D.C., so I'll leave the rest to him. But to answer the question, RG3 or Kirk Cousins, just go with Kirk Cousins right now. Just let Kirk do his thing, see if he can handle it. If he can't, bring RG3 back in. The season's already lost. But at some point, you got to figure out a way to paint RG3 as serviceable so you can try to trade him. I don't personally think he has any real value anymore, but some people think he does. Oh, he just needs to go to another system. I can tell you right now, who's fundamentally flawed, it don't matter what you put him, who you put him with, you can give him the Dallas Cowboy line, and a line in the NFL able to block for 5 seconds. It's just not possible, and that's how long he pretty much holds on to the ball. His footwork's awful. 3-step drops when he should take 5 steps, 5-step drops when he should take 3. I mean, his coach even pointed out, so between you and me and anybody else listening, he's lost cause. If I'm wrong, I'll come back and apologize. But for right now, let's go with Kirk Cousins, see what we can get out of him. For the quick hits, because I got 16 minutes left, I'm going to run down some of the other issues that were going on in the NFL preseason week 2-ish, 3-ish. 12 Suggs hit on Sam Bradford. Was it dirty? I've already gave my opinion on that all week long in our sports group. I don't think what Terrell Suggs did was necessarily dirty. I think in the read option, with the defensive end having the responsibility of A, containment, B, quarterback in that particular situation, people are like, oh, he didn't have to hit him. Sam Bradford's not going to pull the ball away. You don't know. You don't know. I mean, I would personally think you wouldn't even put Sam Bradford in that situation to be hit, but he is. And this is freaking Chip Kelly we're talking about, people. Nothing Chip Kelly does is conventional. So why would you just assume anything when you're playing the Chip Kelly offense? To me, that's just dumb. Assuming anything, playing the Chip Kelly offense, is how you get 40-something points put up on you or 28 points in a half, and you're sitting around looking around like, what happened? They ran 70 plays in the half, and we won't even have the ball for 3 minutes. Because you assume things. Don't assume anything on defense. Stick to your assignment. Do what you're supposed to do. Now, with that being said, the ball was handed off. Suggs is going full speed. he has his head down at the point of the tackle anyway, so he can't really see where the ball is. So we get into the aspect of the tackle. Now, if I'm judging a tackle, and I'm assuming this is how the league judges the tackle too, I'm looking at the pad level. Now, people were saying, oh, you can't hit the quarterback in his knees. From what the league said, that's more or less thrown out the window with the read option, which I thought was the rule too. If you run a read option, you don't have the same protection as a quarterback in the pocket. Now, you shouldn't be taking guys out at the knees unnecessarily anyway, especially when they're not running. So he's going in for a tackle. The pad level is slightly above the kneecap, which theoretically is a textbook tackle, even though it's his down. He puts his shoulder into probably the top 2-3 inch portion of the kneecap, and he goes to wrap him up. Now, when he goes to wrap him up, his hand is down, so his momentum is carrying him past backwards. So he wraps up and he spins around. He's got him down below the ankles or below the kneecap, and he's pulling him down. Now, people are like, oh, that's dirty, that's dirty. If that was really dirty, he would have dove into his knee without trying to wrap up. I have no problem with anybody tackling like that if they're wrapping up. I don't understand what more do you want out of somebody tackling. So the league is soft, man. Borland soft. Freaking Jonathan Martin soft. The Eagles are soft, man. I can't believe that. The Philadelphia Eagles, of all people in the NFL, complaining about something dirty? Like, come on, man. That's not the Eagles I grew up knowing. I've never known the Eagles complain like that about anything. That makes the fan base look soft. Like, do better, Philly. Do better. Ain't nobody after your broke quarterback. He going to hurt himself regardless. You don't need Terrell Suggs to dive at his knees. The guy's injury prone. He'll be hurt by week 6. Probably dropping back. So who cares? Let it go. You don't want him to get hit, don't run the freaking play. I like what Suggs said. That's pretty much what Harbaugh said. I agree with that 100%. You don't want your quarterback with 2 knee injuries getting hit, don't put him in that play. So moving on. The return of Michael Vick. Everybody all across the Virginia, all across Blacksburg, all across Philly, Atlanta, all cheering the return of the infamous number 7, Michael Vick. Only problem is he can't wear 7 in Pittsburgh because Big Ben's got it. So we get number 1, 2, I don't know what he's wearing. I actually just watched the game, and I wasn't even paying attention to his number. But Vick's back. Michael Vick, is he good? No, not anymore. Was he ever good? Yeah, he had his moments. Is he a serviceable backup quarterback? That is a good question, and I will put TBD to be determined, because if we're going off last year, heck no. But everybody keeps saying, oh, he's with the Jets, he's with the Jets, he's with the Jets. Like, you know what? I don't really buy that, because Geno Smith, you can look it up, Geno Smith has a pretty good number statistically his last 4 games with the Jets, which people keep bringing that up every time I talk about Geno Smith. I'm going to use it to my advantage too. Geno was productive with them, at least for 4 games. I don't even think Vic could be productive in 2. I don't think he got anything. And then it bothers me when people say, oh, well, who is he throwing to? Who is Michael Vick ever thrown to when he was in his prime? When he was in Atlanta, he didn't really have a lot of help. So, I mean, what are you saying right now? I expect that from him. I expect Michael Vick to be able to make freaking plays. That's what he is. He's a playmaker. He don't need Calvin Johnson. That's not how he operates. What does he need Calvin Johnson for? He's Michael Vick. He should be able to at least drive an offense down the field and do something. Like, I think his numbers are horrible. I didn't even want to look them up. That's how bad they were. You can look them up yourself. From the Jets last year, they were awful. So, I don't know. He's not going to play much, obviously. I mean, he'd play if Big Ben gets hurt, which is actually a high possibility since he lost his best offensive lineman. But if he does come in, don't expect him to do much of anything. He's very shy in the pocket right now. When he rolls out, he can pass, but he still does silly things. Being a left-handed person, always running to his right for some reason, I don't understand that. Makes it harder for him to throw the ball, but that's what he likes to do. He takes a lot more sacks than he used to. I almost saw a defensive end catch him earlier today, so he's not as fast as he used to be either. And you expect that as he gets older. So if you're a fan, be happy. You know, guy's got another chance to make a little bit of money, not necessarily getting paid a lot. If you're a Vic hater, just save it, unless you're hating on the fact that he's just not good. We don't care about the dogs anymore. I'm sorry. It was awful. It really was. And I'm not trying to necessarily downplay it. It was awful. Like, I wouldn't want nobody to do that to my dog. I wouldn't do that to my dog. But the man went to jail for pretty much 2 years. His life has never been the same since then. At least let him make money in his profession. It's not Michael Vick's fault that he's a professional quarterback. I mean, if Jimmy down at McDonald's did it, he would be able to go back to McDonald's probably when he got out of jail. So if Michael Vick, let Michael Vick go back to the league. Like, who cares? He's been perfectly fine since he's been in the league. I mean, the guy's a changed man in the sense that he's clearly not killing dogs anymore. Freaking, he's a spokesman for PETA. PETA pretty much owns him. Let it go. People writing petitions and stuff, man. And then you got Ben Roethlisberger sitting up there, and he allegedly raped two women. Like, come on. It's embarrassing how hypocritical people are in sports. So I'm not going to go too far into that, keep talking on and on that. Just know, in the grand scheme of things, Michael Vick is probably a better person than Ben Roethlisberger, unless you value dogs' lives over women. So I'll let you decide that. Anyway, in the 49er news, another week, another player in trouble. That's what we do in San Francisco. Only this part isn't necessarily new news. It's new to some people, old to most of us. The organization pretty much played it like that, too. I know a lot of people want blood. I have a hard time keeping up with the 49er people who cover the news in the West Coast area. I pretty much hate them all. They're all just awful. They're so dramatic about everything. If you're not familiar, Ahmad Brooks was at the party with Ray McDonald when he allegedly raped this lady. And I say allegedly because it still hasn't been proven. But, I mean, McDonald is pretty crazy, so I don't know what happened. But anyway, he allegedly raped this woman. How Brooks is involved is that apparently there is surveillance footage of Brooks groping her while she was unconscious on the ground. Not sure how true that is either, but that's pretty much why he got indicted on sexual assault. He was sued in a civil case in May, and I think they were pretty much preparing themselves for the moment when he was actually charged. And so now he's been indicted, and I guess you got to let the due process take its course. For all the people who are like, oh, they should cut Brooks and all these stupid-ass writers, and I say stupid-ass because they really are making me mad. All the people who are like, well, they cut McDonald, they cut Alden. This is a totally different situation. Brooks has been, I think the only other incident Brooks was in trouble for was he was accused by a former player or a teammate or something. I think he hit him with a bottle or something like that, but those charges were dropped. Alden Smith's rap sheet is made for a Straight Outta Compton biopic, all right? I don't want to hear any comparison of Brooks and Alden Smith. Alden Smith is an idiot. Alden Smith got in trouble. He got in trouble every 5 months, pretty much. You know? Like, that's nowhere near the same situation. Ray McDonald got in trouble in the span of weeks, multiple times. McDonald and Smith both were told by the organization, for people who don't know, and for these writers who were sitting right next to San Francisco and act like they don't know, they were told, it was made public, they were told by Bulk New York, if you get in trouble one more time, we're going to let you go. And what happened? They got in trouble one more time, and they got let go. Brooks isn't under that same umbrella. And I like the way that the organization handles the situation by Bulk saying, you know, each case is unique. It is. Like Bruce Miller. Bruce Miller has the Disturbing the Peace charge against him right now. Why would you cut him? He's one of the best fullbacks in the league, deserving the piece. That could be anything. Anything. Like, I can get out, go outside right now and yell, and I can get a charge for deserving the piece. Like, that's petty, man. People want justice for a lot of things that people get away with in our everyday life. That's ridiculous. Let these guys earn their money. Let these guys, let the organization and the league and the police do their jobs, and then we can judge them. But just because you get indicted or you get arrested one time doesn't make you evil, doesn't make you you shouldn't get the death penalty for that. But if you get in trouble five times, yeah, you should be kicked off. If you rape somebody, yes, you should be kicked off the team. If you sexually assaulted somebody, then yes, you should be kicked off the team. Those things only get one try. But disturbing the peace, nah, man, let that go. Let that go. Alden Smith pretty much made a bomb threat to an airport, and we kept him. I don't want to hear anybody complain about Brooks and his indictment. Let the process run its course. We'll see where it goes. And then if the 49ers, if he's found guilty and the 49ers don't kick him off the team, then by all means, I'll be the first person to say something. But if they do, then that's how it should be. That's how it should be. People should stand by these men until everything is found out, all the facts are found out. There are a lot of people. I just gave an example. There are a lot of people out here out to benefit off of these athletes. The owners and stuff have invested in them. Give it some time. In the next big news actually came out today, Trent Williams is the highest paid left tackle in the league now. Does he deserve it? I guess. I don't know. I honestly, he's good, but I mean, everybody has flaws. I personally think Jason Peters is a little bit better, but, I mean, it's just all about preference, I guess. But he's the highest paid right now, which I thought was funny because they sat him out and rested him while his quarterback at the time, RG3, was getting destroyed. But clearly the Redskins want to anchor their backside blocker, which you should. That's a smart move. That's probably the only good news Washington Redskins are going to get within the next month. So celebrate that, Skin fans. Nothing wrong with that. Mariota and Winston showed a little bit of progress. I like what I saw out of both of them in the last week. They both seem to get gotten a little bit better, although Mariota still kind of only looks to one side of the field, and the plays are still really, really, really simple. I'm just hoping that's just them easing them in. I swear I hope he does a little bit more than what I saw in that Chiefs game. But everybody else said he was amazing in the Chiefs game. I didn't see amazing. I saw better, but not amazing. Winston is still going to throw a lot of picks. But he's still got a good arm, still got a great mind, still tough as nails. Took a couple sacks and still got miscues with his offensive line that hopefully get fixed before week one. The Buffalo Bills have probably the most interesting QB battle going on right now between Matt Castle, E.J. Manuel, and Tyrod. I know it's E.J. Manuel. I like to call him E.J. Manuel. But Tyrod is the fan favorite. He's also the head coach's favorite, Rex Ryan. I don't understand why there would be an issue with making him the starter, but apparently there's a little bit of hesitation amongst the staff. Rex Ryan is in full support of Tyrod, so I watched a couple of his plays today before I got on the podcast. I guess he deserves a chance. I don't have anything bad to say about him. He seems like a good kid. He's worked hard to make himself still available in the NFL, which is really hard for scrambling quarterbacks to do, especially in the backup role. You tend to see them kind of fade out, like the Josh Johnsons and stuff like that. But he's found a way to maintain. He's better than Tavares Jackson and those guys. So I said give him a chance, let him start. If he can't handle it, you can always go to Matt Castle, who's a vet. He's not necessarily going to be that much of an upgrade because they've got holes in their offensive line. So you kind of want a guy that can move around a little bit. But it's better than nothing. E.J. Manuel does not belong in the NFL, should not be starting. So I'm not even really putting him in the equation other than the fact that he was the first person to take snaps today. But I just think that's just for show. rugby star Jarrett Hayes is on my team, the 49ers, and will he make the roster? Yeah, he'll make the roster. He showed some promise as a returner, a little bit of promise as a running back, but he's not gonna crack those the depth chart at running back if everybody stays healthy. You got Carlos Hyde, way better. Mike Davis is a rookie, he's better. You've got Reggie Bush, who's definitely better, and Kendall Hunter, who I'm excited to watch today, but I think he's better as well. But he's a fearless returner. I don't think he has a problem with tackling people, so he can play special teams. If Kendall Hunter or Reggie Bush, who are both, by definition, injury prone, were to go down, I have no problem with sticking him in there. To the people who are surprised that a rugby star can play football, wake up. It's pretty much the same game, people. So I don't understand what they're so surprised about. The hardest part is probably transitioning to the pass, and I know people hit differently, but it's still catching and running the ball and using vision and stuff like that. So, nah, man, don't make it that ridiculous. Football isn't that complex of a sport that you can't play a position like running back or receiver and stuff like that. Now, we're talking about transitioning to quarterback, yeah, or cornerback, yeah, or maybe even safety, yeah, linebacker, yeah. But you got guys like we got a guy from England that was a shot putter. He's playing defensive line. Not that complex of a position. You know, you got guys coming to play running back. It's not necessarily that complex of a position. So, yeah, he's an athlete. So he should be able to play it. So I do like to separate myself from all the hoopla, though. He's not that good that he should crack our depth chart. I'll put it that way. I'll say it again. He's not that good that he should crack the depth chart at running back. But special teams player and returner, short. Jimmy G seems to be ready. Like what I've seen out of him. I haven't said much about it because Patriot fans are so sensitive these days. But he looks like he's got more comfortable behind the line, more comfortable in game situations. And I actually look forward to seeing him play at least for two games. We're still waiting on the NFL decision or – well, actually, we're waiting on the, I guess, the judge, the moderator, mediator, to look over everything and get a final decision on whether Tom Brady is going to be four games, two games, or no games. But even if he doesn't sit for all four games, I think Patriot fans can be confident they can win at least two games with Jimmy G back there, as long as the defense stays healthy and the guys around him continue to help. Shouldn't be a problem. And then for my closing argument, we're talking about the NFL extra point rules. Field goal or extra point conversions are dropping. Is that really good for the game? I'm going to say no. And I just don't understand how a league that constantly talks about player safety continues to make changes to the game that are unsafe. So instead of the give me extra point, where pretty much it's like a 99.9% chance nobody gets hurt, you're encouraging people to take to make two-point conversions or to do two-point conversions. That just adds more toll on people, man. I'm not even getting into my fantasy implications, which I'm really upset about, but asking people to go for two more is just going to result in more injuries. More people get their legs rolled up on, more chances for concussions, more chances for quarterbacks to get sacked, and just more chances, even changing the rule where they can now return failed conversions. It's just more of a chance that somebody's going to get hurt. But yet, they're all about safety. It's very hypocritical to me. I also don't like the fact that, and I hate to cite John Gruden, but he made a very valid point. Not every field is the same. So you got guys kicking 35-yard field goals, and some of that is an advantage for some teams. Like, you got guys kicking in the dome, that's nothing to them. But you put somebody in Cincy, you put somebody in Pittsburgh, you put somebody in Baltimore, or, God forbid, the Meadowlands, where you constantly see the crosswind, and you're looking at a situation where it's kind of not even worth it. So you kind of devalue the position of a kicker a little bit. I think personally you do a little bit, but not in the sense where obviously the position is not going anywhere. But if I'm a kicker, I'm pissed. They were trying to get rid of kickoffs. Now they're stretching the extra point back. Like, dang, what more do you want? Pretty soon you're not going to kick the ball off. You're just going to throw it. So it's something to look out for. Probably more of a concern for the fantasy implications. But as far as the game goes, I just don't like a lot of the changes that they tend to do to the nuances of the game. Eventually, I feel like maybe one day I won't even recognize it anymore. And you kind of see that from a defensive standpoint, that you hardly recognize the league anymore from a defensive standpoint. You can't do a lot of things that you used to be able to do. And I'm hoping that it doesn't get that way in other aspects of the game. Leave it alone. They're talking about entertaining fans. The fans are plenty entertained. Like, that's not a good excuse, NFL. The freaking Jags and Bills game on a Thursday night drew more ratings than game six of the NBA Finals, a couple games in the Stanley Cup Finals, more than the World Series. Like, come on, man. This is a regular season game between two of the worst teams in the league. And you got ratings, and you're talking about entertaining fans? Get out of here. Get out of here. It's just another way people to make money because you potentially could score more points and add excitement and this and that. But in all seriousness, you're just putting players at more of a risk yet again. So we'll see if that comes up later on, if somebody brings that up. If not, and just go down as another one of my rants. But anyway, I appreciate you guys listening. I'm going to wrap up this show. Next week, I should have my man Maurice back so we can get another person on here other than my voice. I appreciate Ronnie calling in, and I appreciate you guys for listening. If you have any suggestions, I have a group now on or a page on Facebook now. You can always comment on there, anything you want my opinion about, anything you want to talk to me about or confront me on, I'm more than welcome to talk on there. Or you can find me in my normal grounds, which is Iconoclistically Bombastic Sport. I tend to comment on pretty much 85-90% of the thread. Sports is pretty much what I do. I care about it a lot. I don't always have to be right, but that's the whole point of the show. Get your voice out there. Be heard. You don't necessarily have to be right. Just be heard. We can find a common ground. We can argue, discuss, teach one another what you see, I don't see, and vice versa. It's how you create good discussion, and that's what the platform is all about, is discussion. So, again, you can find me on iconoclisticallybombastic.com, iconoclisticallybombasticsports, @sports_IB is the Twitter handle for the page. My Twitter handle is @activelylazy85, and this has been the Hit Stick Episode 3, and appreciate you listening.